You're listening to the Star Wars Report, episode 134. This episode is brought to you by Big Bad Toy Store. For an amazing selection of Star Wars action figures, collectibles, memorabilia, and so much more, head over to StarWarsReport.com/toys. Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's so good to talk to you this evening. It's time for some Star Wars discussion, some Star Wars conversation, and some Star Wars podcasting. Many would say they're all one and the same. They certainly are here at the Star Wars Report podcast. Hey, it's episode 134. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Please delete as appropriate. I'm your host for this podcast, Riley Blanton. So good to have you on the show. But I want to bring in a couple of fellow guests and co-hosts, and we'll start with my sister, Bethany Blanton.
Hello, one, and greetings all. I'm glad to be back on the show.
Hello there.
Talking to some people I really like.
There's some great Star Wars in-universe greetings. You have the hello there, and you also have good morning. You know, and there's, I'm trying to think of some other good ones. You're shorter than I expected, but
Luke,
but he's not shorter.
Luke.
Yeah.
Tell him make sure it speaks bocce. All right, but he's certainly not shorter than I am. he's taller than I expected. He's Mark Herleman. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going? Already with that? Already? Really? He's shorting out. Gavin kind of dropped some soda on R2 earlier today, and he's been not feeling his festive self.
Well, you'll have to make up for the slack then, Mark.
That's right.
It's been too long. Between Star Wars weekends and schedules, it has been, we haven't had you on the show in several weeks, and you're our faithful co-host. How's it going,
man? It feels like a month and a half or something like that. I mean, I escaped a wildfire, did some caving, all sorts of crazy stuff going on over here, man.
You were all like Obi-Wan and Anakin on Mustafar running from the flames, I hear.
Yeah, that was intense. I mean, you know, we went out, you know, my son had a field trip and we went out to go do some caving, and then we found out before we left that, oh, well, we're only going to go through like 1/10 of this big cave. I'm
But before you landed there, Mark, I believe your son asked you what was in the cave and you said only what you take with you. Okay, sorry.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we go out to these caves that are way out there, you know, because we did the first one and we, you know, the school went back and we decided, well, we'll camp, you know, a day or maybe two. And so we hit the first set of caves and stuff. And we're like, yeah, that's awesome. So we camp the first night and then we're going to go out to these deeper caves way out in the Deschutes Forest, you know. And the maps are just terrible. Like, you know, it says, oh, take Highway 22. Well, you don't see Highway 22 until you've asked like four locals, hey, where's Highway 22? Oh, I think it's over there by Fentner Butte, you know. And so you start taking that road and you get out a mile and then you're like, oh, okay, a 22 sign, you know. And 54 miles later, we're deep out there. We finally find this cave. An hour and a half later of exploring that, it's like, okay, let's head back. And we get out and it's kind of like, you know, episode one with the sandstorm on the horizon. And I'm like, what the heck is with all the sand in the sky? And I'm thinking, there's no deserts around here. I mean, you know, it's desert-like, but there's trees, and so there shouldn't be this much sand. We get in the Jeep and come up over the crest of the first hill, and it's like, oh, goodness, there is a raging wildfire going on somewhere close, you know. Can't quite tell where, but the smoke is dark and black. And then, you know, as we start driving into the trees and stuff, it gets thicker and thicker, and my son, he starts crying. It was intense, man. I was doing 60 and 70 on lava rock gravel roads trying to get out of there because I didn't know where it was.
So basically, Mark, what you're telling me is on the same weekend that the most stressful event for me was not being sure I would get in line to see Mark Hamill. For you, you were literally risking life and limb caving out in the wilderness with a forest wildfire.
When my wife got the text, she was really irritated because she told me, don't take any logging roads. And I'm like, well, they're Forest Service roads. They're different. I mean, yeah, technically they're logging. And I text her. I'm like, hey, you know, not to alarm you, but there's a lot of smoke out here. Where's the wildfire? And she's like, oh, it's near Bend in the Deschutes. You're okay. And I'm like, wait, I'm in the Deschutes near Bend and we're like 50 something miles deep. I really don't know where the smoke's coming from, which direction it's moving, but it's getting thicker. I mean, because it literally went from in front of us to the left of us to the right of us, and then finally got behind us. And I was like, okay, it's behind us. I at least feel comfortable in that regard.
Yeah.
It was creepy.
Well, I tell you, I kind of love when the adventures jump into real life, just because that's always makes things more fun. But, oh, I would be remiss if I didn't bring into the show before we continue our conversation of harrowing adventures. She's harrowed the adventures of DragonCon with us before. In fact, that's where we met her in person for the first time. I'm sure a lot of Star Wars Report will know Amy Ratcliffe, a.k.a. Amy Geek. Welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I feel I don't have a terrifying story or a Star Wars intro, but I am enthusiastic.
It would just be too much after a certain point. Oh, come on, guys. Start talking about episode 8 director already.
My heart is racing a little on behalf of for your past self, Mark, because that sounds so scary.
Mark,
it was something. I mean, when I told my son, I'm like, hey, we're having an adventure, that's when he broke down. He's like, everybody dies on adventures. I'm like, the Hobbit made it back. What are you talking about?
If adventure has a name, it must be Mark Herleman. Mark, you are the most of the people on this roundtable. You definitely are the nominated candidate for most interesting man on the podcast. I don't always run from wildfires, but when I do.
I shared a picture of a Jeep outrunning an avalanche, and I'm like, that's how we felt.
Wait, wrong franchise. So we have so much to talk about. But before we do, Amy, as I said, I'm sure many people know you, but for those like few handful that don't, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into Star Wars fandom and what your profession is, because that's pretty cool.
Oh gosh. When I talk about myself, it's pretty easy. Like, I'm a geek, and that is such a huge part of my life. That sounds like a silly thing to say, but it influences what I do every day. It influences, you know, how I present myself. Like, getting out there and going to conventions and meeting up with other fans and everything has made me a much less shy person than 10 years ago, Amy. And as far as Star Wars, I kind of like it, which you might have guessed.
Oh, that's perfect. This will work out really well.
So it's such a happy coincidence you had me on the show, since I like Star Wars a little. And that kind of started with, you know, I'm a late bloomer. I didn't see Star Wars until it was re-released in, what was that, like 97? So
yep.
I was 16 years old, and then I saw the special editions first. And I've seen those actually more than the original, you know, the original Han shot first, all that stuff, just because I couldn't get my hands on them for a while. And then, of course, I saw the prequels. But what really pulled me into Star Wars fandom and kind of pushed me into the obsessed place that I am currently in is the Clone Wars. I loved seeing the world expand. I love seeing the politics until they got boring, like politics get. I like seeing, you know, a time period when the Jedi were... Well, they were more numerous, but also arrogant and caught up in this war. And there was just so much about the Clone Wars that I absolutely fell in love with. And I'm so glad it's on Netflix now. I was so excited when it came out, like the weekend after it was released, the whole series and the final. Like, I would see so many tweets from friends being like, I'm finally watching Clone Wars and it's amazing. I'm like, yes, finally.
Yes. What's the Netflix, effect? It kind of lowers that barrier to entry.
Yeah, once everybody could, you know, find it without committing to buying seasons on iTunes or buying the DVDs or Blu-rays, there were so many people that came to me and it's like, oh, you were right. I should have been watching this. I'm like, I could rub it in your face, but I'm just so happy you're watching it so we can talk about it.
That's awesome.
just as a quick side thing. Were you as disappointed as I was to see the Clone Wars end? And because to me it was like, I was excited about Rebels, I was excited about Detours when I thought it was coming out, but to me it just couldn't match the feeling of, oh, the Clone Wars has ended.
It really hit me hard. And again, I get back to this, like, I know it's to some people like it's just a TV show, but Clone Wars was so much more than that for me. Besides the story, you know, getting into that when I did, and kind of, you know, falling more in love with Star Wars connected me to so many friends and people that worked on the show, and also happened at a time when I was kind of finding my place as a geek blogger person. So all of that tied in, and it meant that the day they announced the news about the Clone Wars canceled, I was sitting at my desk at my then day job just crying. It was so sad.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a blow to fans, and I'm so glad that we did get to see that sixth season for sure. But you kind of mentioned a few minutes ago, 10 years ago, Amy, where were you when you were first getting into all this? What is your Star Wars story? Was there like a light bulb going off on oh wait, this is cool stuff, or was it a gradual thing?
It was gradual, because you know I really, when I finally saw Star Wars, I don't know what took so long. Like my house was not really just a sci-fi house, and when it, you know, I grew up in a very small town in southern Ohio, no stoplight, very, very rural, not a lot of people understanding why I was sitting in the corner at high school reading a Wheel of Time fantasy book. and my dad did watch a little Star Trek, though. So that's kind of, I started watching Next Generation when I was in junior high. And so I was amazed by the original trilogy, and I remember being especially surprised sitting in the theater in 97 learning that those movies came out 20 years ago, because I feel like even now, I'm clearly more biased, but they hold up insanely well.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And so at what point in the process did you come along, and was Geek with Curves one of your first projects, or did you have online forays before you kind of got into the online side of fandom?
That was my first public project, I guess, so to speak. I had a live journal, because that's what you did.
That's what I hear, yeah.
And that was more private, though, and for friends, and I used that. Live journal was my gateway into Battlestar Galactica. So I fell in love with that series, like series hard. And like I would, you know, I had groups on there and we would talk, and I would like dig for spoilers every week because I couldn't wait.
I just got to ask real quick. I know it's a sidebar here, but what about that show was the moment where you're like, okay, I'm hooked?
I can't pinpoint it. I know it was in the first season. Oh, no, that's not true. It was the, I have a horrible memory. I'm sorry.
Miniseries?
I liked the miniseries, but the episode that like grabbed me was the, when the Cylons were attacking every 33 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first episode of the actual seasons.
Oh, was it nice. First? Okay.
Cause yeah, that was the legitimate first one.
That was such a compelling hour of television. And there were so many times that show at one point, literally, it made me drop. I was eating yogurt and it made me drop my spoon because I was so shocked at something I saw.
There are parts of Battlestar that it's hard to even put my finger on it, but I'm trying to think of a television show that I've been moved that I've been more emotionally moved by than that show in certain moments in that series. And the only one that I can think of is Little House on the Prairie, and I was 7.
And I can relate with that. come home!
If you're talking about emotional, you know, the emotions of a series, and you can outdo Michael Landon, that's saying something.
I'm one of those geeks where you know, they had me immediately when I saw the little air nozzles on the front of the ships and they did a 180 in space. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, same thing with Firefly. It was like the first time I saw Serenity flip a 180, I was like, hooked.
Oh, man. Oh. And that, like, we have in our archives from previous Dragon Cons where we've interviewed some of the cast just because, like, we can. We're like, yes, hey, we're kind of a Star Wars podcast, but we really like your show. Will you let us interview you? And most have very kindly said yes. And just like seeing the cast at Dragon Con, it just makes me like that show that much more. It's the fact that, we'll circle it back to Star Wars. Okay. All right. Fine. But the fact that Ron Moore was working on the live action series just kills me.
Yeah.
Like I read it, and that was only a few weeks ago when those rumors came out. But yes, the showrunner to Battlestar Galactica was working with George Lucas on the live action series. That just boggles my mind. man, I really hope we get to see those, or at least something like it.
That would be really cool.
But
one day.
But I digress. Well, fantastic, Amy. That's definitely. But you're too humble. You haven't mentioned you've done stuff with IGN. You've done stuff with IO9, Nerd Approved. I mean, you're everywhere.
I know. Sometimes I feel bad. I'm like, somebody said, "Why? I just saw your stuff on another site." I'm like, "I'm sorry. I have to pay the bills." So, you know, the more sites I write for, the better that works out.
But you're
fish got to swim, birds got to eat, Amy's got to get paid.
Exactly. It's fair enough. Well, but Amy, you're a very prolific writer, and you've been pretty active on various sites covering, you know, geeky things for a long time now. What's it like as someone who's I blog on occasion, but as someone who's so much more purely on the podcasting side of things, how do you think expressing your fandom through writing has evolved, you know, since the LiveJournal days?
It's kind of crazy how the world works. When you, I was so sad when I started realizing that hard work is actually what was the key to
who knew
to who knew that actually is the thing. So eventually, I started. I guess it was 5 or so years ago, roughly. My own blog, Geek with Curves, because I realized, hey, you really like writing, and in the past, I tried to do. Some blogging about travel writing and food, which are things I enjoy, but not that I'm not passionate about on the same level that I am as, you know, about Star Wars or Galactica or, pick a nerdy topic. It's like, why am I not blogging about that? That, duh. I think I actually said duh out loud. And then, I started Geek with Curves and just talking about anything and everything I wanted to, and the geeky, from geek fashion to cosplay to, you know, articles about silly things like my favorite fictional alcoholic beverages the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster, I think is what it's called. Ooh. In Hitchhiker's Guide. So
how many steps above or below blue milk is that?
It's blue milk, so I think it's got to be above.
Yeah.
There's no part of blue milk that sounds appealing to me.
There's an actual blue milk beverage I saw in Club J the other day. Like, that's a thing. That's an actual thing.
It's where it starts to teal, you have to worry. Oh, that's teal milk. You can't go there. That's too close to green.
That's a little too, I got to stick with the blue milk.
But nothing can top the mountain eating jelly donuts, so there you go.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, the I just took me a second, Bethany. I was like, "Oh, okay, I got it."
So I just kind of wrote that kind of stuff, and I made sure, like, to post frequently and to post a variety of posts, like from reviews to lists to more think pieces, so that if I got to a point where I could show an editor my work, I could point at my blog and show not only a history of, hey, I actually am writing and not just talking about doing it or not doing the this is why I'm not writing posts, which I see bloggers do, and have like also different samples of different types of articles I could write. And I'm trying to remember my first, I ended up doing, I wrote a piece, for my blog about why I love the Clone Wars, and an editor on Newsarama, picked that up. He's like, you know what? Can we run this on the site? And that turned into me recapping Clone Wars, which, was not a paid gig. But when you're I have different feelings about it now, but when you're starting out, taking non-paid work for other sites is sometimes okay. And in that case, it worked out because it led to me eventually being able to interview the cast for the season four premiere with the water episodes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So the season 4, like blue carpet when they premiered those. And other opportunities just kind of started reaching out. I met my IGN editor through Twitter. I met my Nerd Approved editor through a friend who referred me. I applied for the Nerdist job recently in January, and I don't know, like things.
Which, by the way, congratulations on that.
Thank you. It's turned out to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Other things just kind of fell into place, and I do write for a few different sites, but it's mostly because I like to keep my eggs in different. Not what is that saying? Not all in the same basket.
There
that's
you
what
go.
It is.
Well, and that's kind of the way to do it these days. It's like so few people like work traditionally, and that seems to have translated into the blogger world. It's not like you have the cushy writing, you know, writing job with one magazine, and that's all you do. If you want to be a writer, there seem to be so many ways to do it now.
Yeah, and honestly, if you want to be a writer for the web, the web does not pay great.
Yeah.
I feel so fortunate that I've been able to get to a place where I am, and then I can do this. I can write as my full time job. But it is something that I was kind of I did writing and I had a full time day job until just January of this year.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was a lot of, cause I was really trying to grow my writing career. So, you know, it was a lot of 60, 80 hours a week between the two jobs. Mm-hmm. Cause I felt like that's what it took. And that did get me to a point, but something I didn't expect about going freelance, and I should have, is I work a full eight hour day, sometimes nine, or 10, and which is a good problem to have. I'm glad to have enough work to be that busy, but it's not. So I was like, I thought being freelance meant I could like sleep till 11 and watch some movies. I don't know. But no, it's pretty much a traditional. I do get to sleep in, you know, till 8 or 8:30, which to me, I hate morning so much. So to me, that's, I'm like, this is the best.
So like, since you've had that opportunity to really take blogging to the next level, what have been some of the, specifically with Star Wars, what have been some of the best opportunities or favorite moments you've had directly as a result because you blog so much?
Oh, goodness. There have been so many that I treasure. A big one for related to Star Wars is for the StarWars.com blog. I do a column specifically focused on fandom, and just Star Wars fans they're amazing. Clearly, again, biased, but it really does feel like the best fandom I've been involved with or been around, just because Star Wars fans take this thing they love that's been around for over 30 years and people still love it this much. That's amazing, first of all. And they turn it into their own things. They channel their love of Star Wars by making custom music instruments or writing Star Wars parodies or just all these things that I'm constantly amazed by and happy to, I'm always happy to meet, like to talk to people about their fandom. It's just that reassuring, like you're part of, like I'm part of your family, you're part of mine, because we can speak about Star Wars on this level and completely understand each other. So there's been that, but then there's just been so many cool opportunities to talk to people, like Dave Filoni and Vanessa Marshall. She is, oh my goodness, she's a treasure.
That's what I hear.
She's just so excited. She is just as excited about Star Wars as any of us, and it's freaking adorable.
All the Rebels crew seem to be so out there already.
Yeah, they're already like embracing it and interacting, and I think that's really cool.
Now, do you have like a favorite interview or interview moment that comes to mind from your time?
Oh, you know, this one sticks in my head. It was the season 4 premiere of Clone Wars, and they premiered it at Long Beach Aquarium in California because, hey, water episodes, they have theater. It was a cool tie-in. Mm-hmm. That is totally not relevant to the story, but it was neat. I got to talk to Dave Filoni. I think that might have been the first time I interviewed him. I can't remember. But it was, you know, the season after the Night Sisters had aired. And when I watched the Night Sisters episodes, which are some of my favorite, I really thought the Dathomir witches, they reminded me a lot of the Bene Gesserit from Dune. And I love Dune. So I asked Dave about it. And we just had, you know, a couple of minutes nerding out about Dune. And that was, it's not even, you know, but that always sticks in my head because that was just such a, like, pinch me. Like, this is not happening. This is my life. This is really cool moment.
That's awesome. I mean, that it's so cool to hear the stories of moments like that in fandom that really just, I think, stick out to all of us, where if you have the opportunity to have a blog or podcast or you're actively writing, it is amazing how willing so many people in the Star Wars professional world are to reach out and interact with you like that. That's what I think is so cool, is that you can actually have a story where, oh, I talked, you know, I nerded out with Dave Filoni about Dune for a few minutes, you know. That's so awesome. I mean, and I don't really get the sense that happens with a whole lot of franchises.
No, I feel the same. And you're right. I think that is, because there definitely are moments I'm like, oh, like you will actually talk to me? Like, do you know who you are and who I, okay. and that doesn't, yeah, you absolutely have that right. I don't see that happening across a lot of different franchises.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. Man, Amy, you've been more than willing to regale us with some really awesome stories. Would you mind, let's stick around for some of the news stories for the episode?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
Let's do it. All right. All right, here it is. There's not been a whole lot of news. I was joking with Bethany before the show started this week. Is you have Harrison Ford's leg, Domhnall Gleeson's beard, but most importantly, the director of Looper and Brick. His name is, I know that the spelling throws me off. Rian Johnson, or Rian Johnson is what I'm going to now call it. They call him Rian of Tarth. With,
oh no.
That was too easy. All right. Rian Johnson will write, this is according to The Wrap, this is actually an updated version of the story, we'll have it in the show notes on StarWarsReport.com, but Rian Johnson will write and direct the 8th Star Wars movie, inheriting the franchise from J.J. Abrams. Of course, this is all rumor until officially confirmed, but there's some pretty solid Hollywood trades are confirming this. So, mm-hmm. According to two individuals with knowledge of the director's plans, Johnson will also write the treatment for the 9th movie, but he will not direct it, which was the initial rumor that he would actually direct the 3rd one as well. So it was Deadline Hollywood who first reported it, and you know, I guess, and the Wrap story was saying, like, several studios covet Johnson for his, you know, for his ability to work with special effects and practical effects, and especially in the film Looper, kind of giving him the credibility to have worked with a larger budget. But man, I was like, Rian who? I was actually surprised, and because I'm a bit of a movie nerd, but like, if you say Rian Johnson, my name doesn't immediately, you know, the name doesn't immediately jump out to me. Where, for instance, like,
well,
when,
and the reason it doesn't is he doesn't really have that many credits.
But he has some solid ones.
Yeah,
specifically Breaking Bad and Looper.
But that was just three episodes of Breaking Bad.
But, and of course, I haven't seen Breaking Bad, and Twitter spoiled it for me, so thank you very much. I'm bitter about that. Anyway, but like some of the better episodes, evidently, he's responsible for. So there's something that caught the attention of Lucasfilm, but I have to say I am surprised, because if you go for a name like J.J. Abrams, you're talking about a huge, prolific body of work that is very tested and reliable. And when you're talking about someone who has a handful of projects, I think it is an interesting choice. Amy, I want to throw it to you. Where were you when you heard it? What was your initial impression?
Well, my initial impression was, oh, somebody's reporting this, and I went to StarWars.com. Now I'm like, I'm not going to pay attention to this until StarWars.com.
Fair
enough. But then so many people started talking, like, or, you know, kind of, I don't want to say backing it up, but Deadline's reasonably reputable. I think Variety jumped in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Looper, if I remember right, had a few plot holes that weren't tiny, but I still enjoyed the film, and I think it was visually and aesthetically pleasing, and I liked the effects. And though, again, I have a horrible memory, so I don't actually remember what a lot of Brick is about, but I remember seeing it and walking out of the movie theater and being insanely impressed.
Okay. Because I've not seen Brick. I have seen Looper.
Yeah, same here.
Which I did enjoy a lot. But yeah, it's an interesting choice. I think, especially with, what's the Fantastic Four director? Of course, the name's slipping my mind. Unfortunately. Josh Trank. He's 30. I mean, you're talking about a really young, up-and-coming director. So I think it does strike me as a bold move. And the same thing with Gary Whitta, who's a pretty young writer. And he, of course, he has the Walking Dead video game, which is really well written. But he's not exactly someone who wrote, he's not Ted Elliott and Terry Rossino or something like that, some really established name.
Yeah, and if I might add, there's kind of a trend with that, both for the stars chosen for episode 7 and for these directors and writers, both rumored and not. There's a trend of getting, it's kind of like a number of up-and-comers rather than strongly established, really well-known, long time in the industry. Folks.
Which I like. I mean, and kind of going back to it still isn't confirmed, but there are some reputable trades. I call it the Bobby Roberts rule. That's what I'm going to call it now. Bobby Roberts from, for the listeners who don't know, a lot of you guys, if you don't listen to Full of Sith, which of course, Amy, you're a part of, you should be. But, it was last week or the week before, he had a really interesting point of, if you really just want to track the, not really get lost in the flurry of irreputable rumors, and you want to get, information that's a little bit more solid, just stick with the Hollywood trades. And I think he has a very good point. So if it shows up on Variety, Hollywood Reporter, The Wrap, something like that, then I'm a little bit more inclined to pay a little bit more attention to it. So I saw it on Deadline. I was actually on Twitter when it broke. And, I thought, okay, it seems solid. Mm-hmm. So I got up a quick post about it on StarWars.com, but, StarsReport.com, I wish. Mark, have you seen Looper by any chance?
Yeah, Looper I watched. I haven't had a chance to see Breaking Bad. I hear it's good. For me, it was one of those bipolar moments. I mean, that's kind of why I've donned the bipolar Star Wars fan moniker. At first I was like, what? Abrams isn't going to do all three of them? And I was kind of like put off by that because I was like,
me too.
I want to have that trilogy feel, you know, and there's all these standalones coming out. I'm like, well, why can't they do the standalones otherwise? And then I thought about it more and I'm like, well, this actually gives the, you know, episode 7 more time to start working on it right now. You know, and they can start working on 8 and 9 and they don't have to worry about what JJ's doing and move forward, and they still know what's going on through the story group. So there were a lot of potential good things that can come out of this. You know, I mean, you were naming off names of established writers and stuff, and I'm like, who? I mean, it's just not my side of the fandom that I follow that. You know, I'm like, the end result. And I remember being satisfied with Looper. I bought it, but it isn't one I've watched more than twice. So,
yeah.
I mean, Incentive or what, the one where everything was changing and moving around. Oh. That one I watched like 48 times. I'm still
Incentive,
like, what happened?
Invictus, Inception. It was one of those ends.
Yeah, that one.
Inception. Invictus. What am I?
Yeah, but that was just it. I mean, it's like, I watch these movies and I'm, because I remember Aaron Goins was saying, was it Looper or Jumper? And I was like, well, I like Jumper. You know, everybody's like, well, I didn't like this movie or that movie. And I, for me, it's hard to just, well, this movie was good and this guy made that movie, so this next project's going to be awesome, because I'm a Joss Whedon fan, but I didn't really care for Dollhouse. So, I mean, you know, there's always going to be a hit or miss with the audience out there that love what you do. So,
well, and in case anybody is wondering, Rian Johnson did write Looper as well. So those kind of plot points that Amy mentioned, that'll be interesting to see. But I mean, everybody has their good moments and their bad moments in whatever they're doing. But Mark, you're kind of right about that. That initial feeling of JJ's not doing all three.
Yeah,
maybe?
I wonder since
but
the
it worked for the original trilogy. Worked for Empire.
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst idea with the original trilogy. And with the updated story where he's maybe writing episode 9 but not directing it, I wonder if, like, JJ comes back around. Because maybe there is some overlap where you couldn't really have the same director for two consecutive films, but they could bring JJ back for, episode 9.
Or a standalone. I mean, that's always possible, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though he isn't confirmed, Club Jade did point to a tweet from Rian Johnson.
If you doubted it before, this was your moment.
Well, it's a link to a clip called My Prayer. It's a 20-second clip.
What's the movie? So it's I forget that it's from a classic film. I forget the film, and I'll quote it since I can't play the audio, but I'll clean it up a little bit verbally. So it's basically the main character going, I hope I don't mess this up. And it was just nice. The YouTube link, and so that's all he tweeted. So I was like, okay, all right, that's enough for me.
See, I don't know who tweeted it, but I saw this great tweet where it was like Kathleen Kennedy and Oprah voice, and you get a Star Wars movie, and you get a Star Wars movie. I was like, that is awesome.
Well, and there's still part of me that kind of finds it hard to believe and still hard to take in the fact that we're getting a Star Wars movie every year. Like
I don't think that has sunk into me yet.
Yeah, but as they keep announcing directors and more information, I mean, Disney's putting their money where their mouth is. They are going for it. So even if Harrison Ford actually broke his leg, which he did,
I was according to his publicist, because we did talk about it on our last show, and he did not break his ankle as was previously thought, but his leg, which his publicist released.
So old Han's gonna have a little bit of a limp, huh?
I hope not. Yeah, Harrison Ford has suffered a broken leg, not injured his ankle as originally reported by the studio. So it wasn't like some random blog that was speculating. It wasn't the Mirror. It was actually get the hint of my derision. Anyway,
imagine how mean Han Solo would be with a cane.
That would be kind of epic.
That was the only thing I could think of.
He would need an eye.
Chewie would actually be suffering from abuse. He'd be able to reach the back of his head. I told you not to grab that hydro spanner, Herbert. Oh, what are you doing?
He would only be an eye patch removed from Colonel Ty.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Oh, that could be great.
That would be funny.
Oh, man. We have a Michael Hogan story we'll have to tell in the podcast sometime. all right. But yeah, his publicist actually sent an actual information to CNN, so saying that he's on the road to recovery and he hopes to be back on set very soon. Again, people are throwing away around the 4 to 8 weeks, depending on who you listen to. But I mean, a broken leg, frankly, is probably considerably easier to recover from than a broken ankle. Usually, that recovery time is usually lower. So, it's unfortunate and cool at the same time how interested everyone is in an actor's injury when otherwise they wouldn't be, just because it's such a high stakes movie. But that's just the name of the game at this point. It's hard for it not to be huge news.
Beards are huge news.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Speaking of which, Domhnall Gleeson was in London today at a Harry Potter event, and he's sporting the beard, looking very McGregory. That's all I'm going to say. It's not really news other than it was a cool picture. We'll put it in the show notes if you guys are interested. Go ahead, Amy.
Oh, can I ask a question?
Of course.
I have watched the Harry Potter movies repeatedly, and I don't remember who he plays in Harry Potter.
he was Bill Weasley, but that was my exact reaction.
Yeah.
I was like, who was he in Harry Potter? I watched those films.
Well, and it was strange because he was very gaunt and had long red hair. He said,
"Oh wait, was Bill Weasley the one? Is he the Weasley that trains the dragons and all that?"
I believe so. Yes.
Honestly, I'm
trying to remember.
I just nearly called my Weasley
with my brain. But
I know.
But yeah, he kind of had the facial scar a little bit and kind of looked really rough.
Oh, okay.
Different than he looks right now, actually. But and I want to say he only appeared in the last film. I've only seen the Harry Potter films once, sadly, and it was recently too. Bethany and I went through them all last year in a kind of binge watch to catch up. But that's another story for another day. It's a light news week, but it's funny that actually, you know what? On kind of a side note, it's funny that I call it a light news week when they announced the director for the next Star Wars movie. But I think TMZ kind of spoiled us for large news, and it'll basically have to be plot points leaking or script leaking to top some of the stuff that's come out so far. And there's that kind of fever. In fact, I think this would be a good way to close out the show. I want to touch on a brief discussion. Amy, you've followed fandom for some time now, at least. There does seem to be a fever pitch almost I don't know. I've been thinking about this ever since the photos leaked to TMZ.
I think I have a very good example of what you're about to say, because I'm your sister and I know what you're going to say.
That synced in logic
is another.
She's channeling you again. You better step back a little.
I think we need some mood music. All right, here we go.
So supposedly, Domhnall Gleeson's beard has nothing to do with Star Wars, and he can't speak anything at all about his Star Wars role, which has me just sitting here wondering, and is he any relation to Obi-Wan? He looks so much like
Ewan
McGregor.
In a twist move, he shaves it right before filming.
But I'm sitting here, and it's so exciting, and I'm wondering about it so much, because it would be really cool if Obi-Wan did have a relation. I'm going through all of these different possibilities. And
the emotional ups and downs.
And what is this, what is Riley saying about speculating?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is totally what I'm
doing. See, you sound like me with the Imperial Handbook. I'm like, ooh, it's still set in Legends, which means that Legends is still going, which means it's not quite dead, which means Sword of the Jedi may happen still. Please, please, makers, make it happen.
Oh, goodness. I think it's the fandom.
Or just pause to consider for a second how excited and contemplative you are about somebody's beard. I mean, it is a.
I know. I was gonna point
it is
that out.
Exactly. I mean, it's a weird place where even within the first year after the announcement, now that it's filming, there seems to be this. And this is all new to me because I wasn't really following the prequel productions when they were coming out. So this idea of the sheer fever, the fan site fever, surrounding this film is still kind of weird for me.
Yeah, no doubt. I missed it with episode one and kind of came into it with episode two, and then tried to avoid it as much as I could with episode three, but this one it's hard to dodge. I mean, I'm almost to that point where as we get closer to December, you know, of 2015, I'm like, do I need to get adult diapers? I may pee myself a little. I'm so excited.
Wow. I don't know. Amy, what's your take on this? Are we just too interested in this movie at some point? When is the line crossed?
Oh, goodness. I don't think you can ever be too interested or too excited, but I will say that I am excited. And because of my job, like I can't, like if TMZ posts behind, I'm going to have to write about it for somebody. So I have to look at them. So from that angle where like you just have to like jump on every little thing, sometimes it gets a little exhausting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like when you see your Twitter feed, like blow up with 20 people all talking about Harrison Ford's ankle. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's just his ankle, guys. Like, not, I mean, like, not even it's like fans. Now. It's just that every site.
It's only a flesh wound.
It'll get better.
You're like, whose catch line is funniest?
Yeah. So, yeah, and it's not even like, it's not so much fans. Like, it's just like, it's just that every site has to report on it. And being that I get it. Like, it draws hits. Like, that's them's the breaks. Breaks and he broke his ankle. I totally did that on purpose.
I see. But, what you
and
did.
That's just kind of the way the business is. So of course people are going to post those stories. But sometimes it gets a little. Sometimes it wears you down a little.
Yeah, for me that happened when I saw the John Boyega tweet that just had the word Skywalker in it, and I saw a whole huge blog post written about that tweet. No, but the blog post went like this. Paragraph one through five. Paragraph one was, he is a Skywalker. Paragraph two was, he has a scene with Luke. Paragraph three was, I was like, this is a whole article on one word. A last name.
Yeah. I think that was just a test, just to see how much he could.
Truthfully, if I were him, I probably wouldn't be able to resist.
He does not understand the power that he wields. That young Boyega fellow. Man. No, I'll tell you what, it's an interesting time. We'll definitely keep following the stories as they come out. We got a quick email to jump to before we jump out for this episode. Let's see if I can pull her up here. This email comes from Matt Marks, it was a long email, Matt. I kind of condensed into the question portion because I wanted to address this part on air instead of just writing it. So he says, now as for my assignment. In reference to the previous part of the email, he says, it was interesting to hear you report on the rumored Rebels cast. He was talking earlier about catching up with our show from a couple months back. He says, it turned out to be almost completely accurate. The only incorrect one was David Oilo. it still throws me off. There are too many vowels in that word. Anyway, I can correctly pronounce Lupita Nyong'o, but I cannot pronounce David Oyelowo. It still feels awkward.
My tongue is numb.
It's irritating me. It's like I can't finish the email now. I've got to figure out how to pronounce.
Hey, I feel you. I cannot say Corin Horn. I got to call him Coran. I can't do it.
Oilwoo?
Just keep reading. Okay. Just keep reading.
Who is instead Kevs in episode 7, possibly, although if I remember correctly, it was rumored that he would be in both. Although we still know, who knows, we may still hear something about that. But he says, so he could have some role to play in Rebels. You were a bit underwhelmed with the list of names, and I kind of feel like a jerk now that I've met some of these people, and I was like, I've never heard, I'm sad that it's not Clone Wars people, was my initial reaction. And of course, now I've actually met some of the wonderful cast behind Rebels, so it's kind of, anyway. I'll finish, he says, disappointed that there weren't more familiar faces from the Clone Wars. Now that the characters have been introduced, and we've heard some interviews with the actors, especially Freddie Prinze Jr. and Vanessa Marshall, what do you think of the cast of Rebels? May the Force be with you, Matt Marks. Thanks for the email, Matt. And I thought that, yeah, that's a good one, because we are, I mean, it's a mere, 2 months, probably? 3 months? I guess we still don't have a concrete date on the Rebels premiere, or do we? Not that I know of.
I think it's in August, I believe.
I mean, I heard that early, but I haven't seen anything about it since. Amy, help us out. Have you heard one way or the other?
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah.
We're not alone.
I know. Thought that would be a pretty big piece of news.
Yeah, I think it would, if they'd officially announced it.
If all of us missed it, I won't feel so bad.
Yeah.
We've unlearned too much.
Yeah.
On the Disney XD site, where they actually have the Star Wars Rebels site, they don't have any premiere dates listed prominently. Yeah, so I guess they're still waiting for to set date, which is odd. Come on, guys, it's June. We are much closer. In fact, I've seen from a distance. I haven't actually had the pleasure of personally meeting any of them at Star Wars Weekends, but I've seen a young man who plays Ezra Bridger. Of course, I've seen Vanessa Marshall in some interviews. I didn't see her on stage. And then, of course, who was it the weekend we went? It was Tia Sirkar.
Yeah.
Tia Sirkar, excuse me, who was on stage at Star Wars Weekends. And so they do seem like a great bunch. And it's still kind of hard to tell what the chemistry is going to be like. But having seen a few clips, a couple teasers, I definitely do see a chemistry building. And it hasn't been shown publicly yet, but at Star Wars Weekends, one of the introductory videos that they're playing at these Behind the Force shows that Ashley Eckstein is hosting, they play a kind of behind-the-scenes clip that was produced for Star Wars Weekends, and it just kind of shows the actors goofing around in the sound booth, introducing themselves and the characters they play, but it does have a very Clone Wars vibe.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't know. In answer to your question, Matt, I'm definitely much more excited now than I was initially, and I think that was partially due to still being kind of depressed that Clone Wars wasn't continuing.
Yeah, Matt, I'd say the same for me to some degree, which is not that unknown is bad, because it really is exciting to me to see how all of this turns out, and I tend to not be the type of fan who gets really worried if things are going to be messed up, you know. That doesn't really get to me. I have to see huge evidence of that taking place before I start to get worried. But to me, it was just, I was still bummed about the Clone Wars ending, and feeling homesick for the Clone Wars. That doesn't necessarily make sense, but Rebels didn't feel like the Clone Wars, and I was missing the Clone Wars. So I think in some ways, those feelings translated into not being as excited about Rebels to begin with. It wasn't that I wasn't excited. It was just different, and I had to get myself to a place of, oh, wow, this looks really cool, and the actors seem really nice, and, oh, the animation is great, and the storyline. You know, I had to get to a place of getting excited for it.
Yeah. No,
I'm still worried about Pong Krell. I mean, you know, I was so excited about Pong Krell, and then he turned out so different. I'm like, well, how do we know these characters are going to be as awesome as they're being portrayed right now? I mean, Freddie Prinze Jr., you had me right there. I was like, okay, there's an actor from my generation. You know, I can latch onto this guy. He's awesome in my books. But I'm the trepidatious guy. I'm like, okay, how long is Rebels going to go? I'm all for it going for a while, but if they're going to connect it to episode 7, 8, and 9, well, any characters that are connected to that, boy, I hope they have an exit strategy like Ahsoka or something like that, because then it's like, okay, are we going to get into a point where we have, you know, an ongoing backstory continuing past the other story, and how are they planning on working that together? I mean, oh man, my wheels start turning when it comes to that stuff. But cast wise, it looks like a good cast. I've joked about how it looks like Firefly, Star Trek, you know, or Star Wars wise. And I don't know. For me, I it's a matter of once we see it all come together. The little trailers and stuff we've got look really cool, but I got to remind myself, you know, episode one's trailer was just unbelievably awesome. And then when I saw those scenes as they were in context, I was like, oh, well, that's not as cool as I thought it was going to be. Those Gungans coming out of the smoke.
I don't know. I thought they were pretty cool, but I see what you're saying. No, and it, that's the kind of thing. Even with Clone Wars, sometimes the trailers would overbill the content. So we'll have to wait for the premiere, the as yet announced premiere. But I'm sure the wait won't be too long. And that, my friends, is going to bring this episode of the Star Wars Report to a close. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, thus ends episode 134 of the Star Wars Report. Thank you so much for listening. Join the conversation. Shoot us an email like Matt did at starwarsreport@gmail.com. Again, at starwarsreport@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/StarWarsReport, Twitter.com/StarWarsReport. And if you've enjoyed this episode, shoot us an iTunes review. We always appreciate those. That's starwarsreport.com/iTunes. That'll redirect you right over there. Easy peasy. And then we'll tell you how to follow each of the hosts. But before we do, I want to give you a chance to plug away. Let listeners know a couple of projects that you're working on.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Amy_Geek. I post a lot of links to stuff I do there, as well as geekwithcurves.com. And I've got a couple articles coming up probably in the next 2 or 3 insiders. I don't know, soon. So keep your eyes on Star Wars Insider. You should subscribe if you aren't already, and not just for my articles.
Oh, absolutely. We shall keep our eyes peeled for sure. And yes, if you're not following Amy at Amy_Geek, you absolutely must. She's a must follow in the world of Star Wars social media. So, man, Amy, we've really appreciated you coming on the show and swinging with us and dealing with some of the we've had some scheduling issues that were entirely my fault and had to do with Mark Hamill at Star Wars Weekends. And that's the story there. But thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It was really fun to talk with you.
It's great to have you.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at The Riley Guy. Bethany's at Bethany L. Blanton. Mark is at Illogical Rogue 2. The same for Instagram for me and Bethany. Mark, when are you getting an Instagram?
You know, I've got an Instagram. I'm just not really using it that much.
Oh, come on. Oh, see?
He's lurking.
Yes, I'm lurking. I'm lurking, you know, just like the second Airborne, you know, just hiding out.
Yes, well. Well, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, that's what you want to do. Stick around until next week. We will be talking about the further adventures of Star Wars podcasting here at StarWarsReport.com. This has been the Star Wars Report. Did I mention the Star Wars Report? That'll do it for this episode. Hey, remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
For you listeners out there, no, Riley does not just do that for the benefit of the show.
I think of the Family Guy episode every time I feel like doing that. It's like da 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 da,
which is a lot.
Da 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 da. I can't help
recording.
I can't help myself. Okay, I'll stop the recording here. All right.